Okay. First agenda item is report on recent activities. I'll start. The executive committee met on September 6th. If you go to tab 1, document number 4, the report is there with attachments. I'll briefly run through all the items that we touched on in that meeting, then entertain any questions. First thing the executive committee discussed was the operations handbook for the council. Paul, Howard, and staff put together a handbook, and they recommended several revisions to clarify the role of the SSC. You should have that draft operations handbook in your binders, and take it home and read it between now and the November meeting. We plan on voting on that at the November meeting. We also discussed Monkfish, which is our 345 agenda item today. Briefly, we received a new update on the status of the resource, and we need to initiate Framework 5 to incorporate the new biological reference points and perhaps to make some adjustments to the plan that have been recommended. We'll discuss that more at 345. We also talked about the SSC and the new requirements under the MSA. There's a process that's been outlined, I believe. Is that schematic here in the binder? There's a schematic in the binder that outlines how the SSC is going to be incorporated into our process. There's also discussion about, incorporating SSAC members into the SSC so that we have one larger or group, roughly 15 members. Again, I'd refer you to the schematic to see where the SSC fits into the grand scheme of things. Talked about the scallop survey, AP. Many of you know we have a trawl survey, AP, and the Science Center has provided funding for a scallop survey, AP. We're recommending that we use the same structure that we currently use for trawl survey, with council member participation and leadership on the committee. So if any of you on the council would like to serve on the scallop survey AP, be sure to include that on your committee requests that you submit. Public input, AP, and other operational issues. This was actually kind of a long discussion at the executive committee meeting. Essentially what the concept is, or the recommendation from the executive committee to the council, is that we have speakers that come to the microphone either at the council meeting or at committee meetings, identify who they are, if the comments they're about to make are official positions of the organization that they're affiliated with, or just their own personal opinions, and also if their organization has taken action to support those positions. And additionally, it would be helpful for the council to know who exactly that organization is and who they represent. We also talked about U.S.-Canada issues. There's a sense that we need to pay closer attention to our interactions as a council with the TMGC process. We also recommended that a staff member of our council become a permanent voting member of the TMGC. Groundfish FMP Amendment 16 goals and timelines. Well, we kind of touched on that yesterday. The regional administrator had communicated with the council about her concerns over us losing ground. The vote date is fixed for October of next year, and we had a pretty lively discussion yesterday about where we are and where we need to go. You can read the text in the memo here. Timelines for implementing MSA provisions. The executive committee had a look at a draft 3-year management action schedule that staff had put together. Of course, we'll vote on priorities in November. There's a lot of discussion about when we have to take action on certain FMPs to comply with MSA, specifically when we need to get ACLs and accountability measures put into our plans. And for better or for worse, that drives a lot of the timing of when we must take up action on certain FMPs. Of course, we're still waiting for guidelines for revised NEPA requirements. New gears in Eastern Georgia's Bank, U.S. Canada area. The XCOM agreed it would consider new gear configurations. However, I think at this date we still don't have the regulations. Is that right, Pat? Okay, so we're still waiting for regulations. If you recall, the council passed a motion. It was at the June council meeting on how that process worked. And the council also said that either the executive committee or the council could forward requests to the RA, but we're still waiting on those regs. Availability of data for analysis used by PDTs and council. The XCOM agreed that the council's PDTs need to have access to relevant data which supports specific management decisions. The data used to support decision making is not available. The PDT will not review the research in question, nor will the council consider the study or related analysis. This is consistent with the policy that the council adopted for cooperative research. And the last issue we discussed was the funding of ICAT. The council will continue to fund our members' attendance at ICAT annual meetings when it's our turn in the rotation. There's a rotation that's been set up. Each council has a turn at it. I'm not sure if it's, is it every 4 years? Yeah. Every 4 years. Funding attendance at AP meetings will be on a case-by-case basis pending the availability of funds. That's pretty much a boilerplate statement. You know, if we have the money and we see a need, we'll put somebody in the room. Any questions? Pat?
Just a clarification. A staff member wouldn't become a member of the TMGC, a voting member of the TMGC. They'd be a technical advisor to the TMGC. The voting members are set by agreement with Canada.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Paul?
Just a couple quick things, Mr. Chairman. One, by now you all know that Leslie Ann has left the council staff and has taken a job with CZM. She's the new director of Coastal Zone Management. So we're very happy for her and very proud of her. We've rehired Chad Demarest, who used to work for us. He's leaving the state, and he'll be on board October 10th to take over for Leslie Ann and be our habitat specialist. We're also hiring Sarah Potsky. She's a UMass master-level student who's just finishing up her master's degree in fisheries management. And she'll be coming aboard on contract for 1 or 2 years to assist in scallops or maybe groundfish. We don't know yet. Next week, Rip, John, myself, Laurie, and Phil Herring are going to a two-day workshop in Washington, D.C. to talk about MSA reauthorization. All the other councils have been asked to send five people to that, along with the regions and other invited guests for that workshop. So we'll report out on that in November. As John mentioned, the priorities meeting is in November, so it's going to be complicated this year by having to develop a three-year plan to implement the new Magnuson Act with ACLs and AMs and also sectors and things like that take a long time to work out qualification criteria and everything. So you see that although we'd like to get actions done in a year, they pretty much take 2 years. So take a good look at the executive committee summary and be prepared to, if you're going to amend it, just like we've done in the past, if you're going to add something, something's got to come out because we can at most do six actions in 1 year. And We're scheduled to have a one-day council meeting October 25th. There was much more work needed to complete scallops not ready for this meeting, Framework 19, in order to be implemented in March. You know, we're going to have to vote everything in October to get that implemented on time. So that's a whole day, and I'm sure it's going to take 8 hours when you listen to the presentation and all the work that still needs to be done. There still needs to be an awful lot of development done as well. So pay attention to Deirdre today to see, make sure we can have enough time to get this done by October 25th. If not, then, we're, you know, depending on what decisions you make today about scallops, we may have to delay it to the November council meeting, which means it won't be done in time for the fishing year. And I just would ask, under other business or whatever, does the Groundfish Committee have enough direction on what are we going to do at the October one-day special meeting for scallops? It's one day. It'll probably take 8 hours. I just need a little more discussion by the council. What do we expect from the executive committee, and what do we expect the council to do at that October 25th meeting? Because if we're done at, say, 5 o'clock for scallops, are we going to go all night and rehash everything we talked about do we do sectors, do we do days at sea? So I think a little discussion about that, because I don't think any of us want to have another two-day meeting and have one-day groundfish, and I'm not so sure that would be the best money spent best to have that. So if you could have a little more direction to groundfish on what we'll do, that'd be great.
Questions for Paul? Dr. Pierce.
Paul, you mentioned a workshop you and John are going to along with some staff. Is there an agenda available to describing what's actually going to be discussed?
I don't know if Karen has it, but I'll get it to you. There is a draft agenda. I think there's about 5 items on it, Pat. It's in a workshop format for 2 days, and I think there's about 5.
It's 5 work groups.
5 work groups, so I'll get that to you.
Okay, thank you. Just a quick question. National Standard Number 1 guidelines, is that on the agenda?
Anyone else on the council? Maggie?
Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. Mr. Chairman, with respect to the recommendation of the executive committee about the information you would like the public to provide to you when we speak to you, do you have some guidelines, written guidelines, to give to us?
Maybe Pat might want to speak to that.
Yes. We are working on them with the executive committee. Jean took a look at them, and we just want to make a couple of refinements, but we'll put it on the website, and we'll also send an email to all our interested parties so that they can expect it the next time and so forth. So it won't be a surprise.
Yeah, it wasn't ready to present to the council today, but just wanted to let people know we're working on it. Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. Can you explain the reasons on why you're doing away with the existing scallop survey advisory panel and changing the structure?
The last scallop survey panel was not funded, so we had a difficult time getting council membership without compensation. And it is now going to be officially funded, similar to the other trawl committee, and we wanted to mirror the way they are operating and their membership to have consistency.
Okay, well, we actually were funded under an RSA, and in fact, we've been conducting the meetings in an open way, inviting experts in, so we don't really have a very specific membership like you do on a trawl panel. And we found that to be very effective because we're looking at a lot more than the trawl advisory panel. We're looking at all sorts of new strategies and technologies. We're looking at a much more expanded purpose. It's more of a benthic survey. So it does require a lot more flexibility in membership. I'm afraid that the path that you are choosing is going to be a lot more restrictive and a lot less functional.
Anyone else? Pat?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In response to council and industry concern regarding the cost and technical issues of requiring vessel owners to declare their fishing activity via the VMS for every trip, beginning on September 25th, vessel owner operators may use the interactive voice response, the IVR system, as an alternative method to declare a new fishing trip. By providing the fishing trip activity code that corresponds to the same VMS trip, instructions on how the IVR system will work will be mailed out to vessel owners later this week. And just a reminder, this is a one-year pilot program to see how it works. We wanted to let people know that for the closed area one hook gear haddock special access program, we're extending the deadline for vessels to notify the observer program of their intent to fish in closed area one this fall. Vessels must notify the observer program of their intent to participate in the program by September 21st. The regulatory deadline is September 1, but due to industry concerns about vessels being unaware of the deadline, it's being extended for this fishing year only. So again, till September 21st. I'm sure everybody is aware at this point that we published an emergency rule in response to the council request to reduce the minimum size for haddock that was published and effective on August 10th. We reduced it from 19 inches to 18 inches in all areas. The hope is that this will reduce the discarding of haddock. And we've begun to look at the haddock data, the observer data, and the indications are that discards have been reduced. And we think at this point they may have been reduced by about half. So we're still looking at that data, but initial indications are that it was effective in reducing discards. Information on our leasing program from May 1 of this year, the start of the fishing year, through September 17th. Total leases processed were 275. Total approved, 262. That represents 303 distinct permits or vessels. Total days at sea leased so far this year are 5,909.58, and the average cost per day at sea leased, $580.56. It's notable that this is a significant increase over the last 2 years. At this approximately the same time in 05 and 06, the total leases processed were 115 and 175. Respectively, and again, this year so far it's 275. Total days at sea leased in 05, 3,514 approximately. 06, approximately 4,935. This year again, it was 5,909, just over 5,909. Average cost also seems to be increasing. And on that request from the council to implement the gear standards in the multi-species fishery, we anticipate a proposed rule to be published later this month. On surf clams and ocean quahogs, the final rule for framework adjustment one to the surf clam and ocean quahog FMP published in the Federal Register on September 11th This framework requires the use of VMS, vessel monitoring systems, for all surf clam and ocean quahog ITQ vessels beginning on January 1, 2008. The VMS requirement will become effective for the limited access permitted vessels not using ITQ in Maine on January 1, 2009. So a heads up for folks there. Hopefully you've seen the letter that we've, based on the results of the recent monkfish assessment, approved framework four. Permit holder letter is being sent out this week. It'll publish in the Federal Register. It was filed on the 18th, I think it was, 17th. Filed on the 17th. It's going to publish on September 21st, and we expect it to be effective on October 22nd. Let's see. It's just one other thing on that. It's actually going to be published as an interim final rule, which means that we'll be accepting comments on it. So there'll be a 30-day public comment period on the interim rule, which will end on October 22nd. On SVRM, notice availability on the omnibus standardized bycatch reporting methodology amendment published on July 26th. Comments on the amendment will be accepted through September 24th. We extended the comment period on the proposed rule to implement the amendment by 4 days so that it will actually coincide with the comment period on the amendment. So they'll both end on September 24th. Dave Pierce spoke a little bit yesterday about the problem we'd had in the herring fishery with respect to monitoring the Area 1A quota. There seemed to be sort of two primary problems there. One of them was that the dealers were misreporting their catch as bushels instead of pounds. As a result, they were converted to pounds, which means they were multiplied by 60, which obviously increased what we expected, our projected landings. And the other major problem seems to be just a failure to report by some vessels and dealers. And those issues have been referred to OLE, and I know Mark is going to talk about that in his report a little bit. As you're probably aware, we've been working now for quite a while on trying to put in place additional measures under the Atlantic Large Whale Take Reduction Plan, additional gear restrictions, broad-based gear restrictions that would extend all the way from Maine down to Florida. The comment period on that final environmental impact statement closed on September 17th. And we expect to have final regulations in place on October 1st. We expect to file final regulations by October 1st, I should say. And I think just one last item. The scup fishery for summer period 2007 will be closed at 12:01 a.m. on Friday, September 21st. The closure notice was filed on September 18th and will publish on September 21st. Although the federal quota has not yet been reached, the landings to date and the expected continued landings for non-federally permitted vessels fishing in state waters led us to conclude that the scup quota will be reached by or before October 31st. And so as a result, we need to take action to close the federal fishery. And that's all I have.
Thanks, Pat. Questions for Pat? Back to Pierce.
Yeah, Pat, the U.S.-Canadian Steering Committee, can you provide us with an update as to what happened at the Steering Committee regarding, mackerel, dogfish, pollock, and halibut, I think. I know there were some discussions to be held, but I don't know the details.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I actually should have done a summary on the steering committee. I just forgot. The major issue at the steering committee this time was the TMGC discussion, but there were also several other agenda items. We got updates from our working groups, the steering committee work groups, and that includes there's a habitat work group, a protected species work group, and an ocean work group, and effectively, or essentially all of those updates were information back to the steering committee on discussions on better collaboration between the U.S. And Canada on those issues. In addition, we had a report from a scientific discussion, a U.S.-Canada scientific discussion that occurred in April of this year that included some recommendations for collaboration in the area, in the science area. In fact, the science group, at the request of the steering committee, had considered those four species that you mentioned as possible first priorities for collaboration in scientific research. And so the science group was in response to the steering committee, reporting back to the steering committee for the four species that were identified on dogfish. There was a recommendation from the science group, the science discussion, that a joint U.S.-Canada track assessment be held in March 2009. There was a recommendation from the group that for mackerel, a joint U.S.-Canada track assessment be held in December 2009. On halibut, I believe the recommendation was to I can't remember. It was not for a joint assessment, but it was for I think the feeling was that it wasn't ripe yet for a joint assessment and that the best we could do was perhaps share information. And then on pollock, there were discussions about looking at tagging opportunities and issues with respect to mixing and the level of mixing between U.S. and Canada stocks, and therefore the appropriateness for a joint assessment. And so they are developing a research plan on pollock. So those are the four species that they made recommendations on. They also made recommendations in the area of habitat collaboration, ecosystem assessment, ecosystem integration type research, and survey work. And so we had the report the response from the report to the science. From the science discussion was effectively to endorse the scientific group's recommendations.
Okay, thank you, Pat. Therefore, I suppose we should consider all of this planning to be a prelude to the development of some U.S.-Canadian understanding for joint management of these species in the U.S.-Canadian area. Is that where we're headed?
It doesn't necessarily indicate that we would do complementary management or have management discussions, but it does lay the groundwork for those discussions if we decide that they're appropriate.
Okay, thank you. And I have one other question. You mentioned days at sea leasing, that in 2005 something like 3,500 days at sea were leased, and 2007 so far about 5,900 days were leased. My question is, has any work been done or is any work going to be done within your office to evaluate, determine the potential impact of this dramatic increase in day at sea leasing on our ability to control fishing mortality in the groundfish fishery? I only say this because, of course, as we move deeper into the development of the next amendment, days at sea leasing will be part of the discussion. And this is a large increase. So is anything like that happening within your office?
Not within my office, but the PDT has looked at that, and I expect they'll look at it again for Amendment 16. There was an assumption made in Amendment 13 about the number of days that would be used, and so that mortality was calculated in at that point. Whether we've gone beyond that or not, I'm not sure at this point.
Mike Leary.
Pat, could you update us on the progress of the Days at Sea accounting website that we talked about, I think, maybe last November?
The public website for we have there was – my staff had suggested that I actually provide a date when that would be available, and I'm declining to do that. But they seem to think that we're getting closer. We've hired actually two additional contractors to help with the work on that. But I want to be absolutely sure that before we go public with anything, that it works. I would say within the next 6 months anyway.
Paul Howard.
Other interest at the steering committee, we found out that the Canadian equivalent to our Endangered Species Act is called SARA. I don't know what it stands for. And their arm, that Species at Risk Act. And they have an arm called COSIWIC that looks at listing certain species as threatened or endangered and controlling the process. And that group, COSIWIC, has now listed or is considering listing dogfish under the Endangered Species Act. So it was quite funny because one of the Canadian fishermen said, why don't you just come out on my boat? I'll show you where the dogfish are.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, back to the IVR letter, I believe that's going to solve the, as I understand it, the cold computer problem. That's the reason for this, that we'll be able to use that in the winter when the computers won't start. Thank you for that. I think that's, a timely solution to a problem. On the haddock, I think the discard rate will drop even further once the states allow us to land them, because right now you've basically caught the states flat-footed by moving so rapidly. You can possess them in federal waters, but you got to drive through state waters to deliver them. And at least in my state, you can't bring in an 18-inch haddock because they have to change the law. I don't know how many other states are in that position. On the herring, on the reporting requirements, I think a lot of especially small vessels that land the incidental catch of herring are still unaware that there are reporting requirements. I know a letter just went out. I just received it before I left. Reminding people that already have reported in the past that they have to land them, but we may need to send a letter to all permit holders because there are a number of people that haven't landed over 2,000 pounds in the past that may be landing over 2,000 pounds now and are not aware that there's a reporting requirement through the IVR system. I've tried to educate people in my area, but I don't know if other parts of the coast have been made aware that if you land over 2,000 pounds in any trip, you have to report all your landings for that week.
Anyone else for Terry, then Dave?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. David's comment just prompted me thank Pat for the cooperation of your staff for working with us on this herring reporting data issue, and to advise all of you that we do have a joint meeting between Maine DMR science staff and NOAA statistical folks at the end of this month to resolve the as many of the herring reporting glitches that we can handle all in one day, including the incidental catch and state waters landings.
Yeah, the state of Maine has been great in cooperating on this issue. Thanks, Terry.
Thanks. Back to the point you made about SCUP and going over during the summertime. That's a period when there are state shares on the commercial side, correct? I'm wondering where, you know, where we went wrong there. Or
Actually, only the states have state-by-state quotas. The federal just has a coastwide quota. And the problem was that the states set their coastwide, their summer period quota higher than the federal summer period quota.
Maggie?
Pat, with respect to Monkfish Framework 4, did I hear you say that you're having a comment, another comment period on Framework 4 that ends on October 22nd? And when is the actual implementation?
Yes. We're providing for an additional comment period, given that the results of the assessment were not available at the time of the proposed rule for Framework 4 was published. Were not available when the proposed rule was published. So there's an additional 30-day public comment period on the interim final rule, and it coincides with the 30-day cooling-off period. So the comment period ends on the same date that the regulations become effective on October 22nd.
So the regulations become effective on October 22nd,
yes.
Even though you'll be still – okay. Okay, that's – I thought we were going to have to wait another time frame after the October 22nd for this framework, which we obviously needed implemented sooner. On that issue, is it possible that before the Monkfish discussion today or – before the Monkfish Committee meeting, that we could get some more updated statistics on what the landings versus tack are for this fishing year so that we can get an idea of whether or not we're actually going to achieve that tack this year because of the restrictions under the interim rule?
Yes. I think there was a tack report provided, hopefully provided for the council meeting, but it probably only went through June, but even at that point, a fairly high percentage of the tack had been taken, especially in the southern area. But we've looked at projections for whether or not we think the tacks will be taken this fishing year with Framework 4, and I'm actually concerned that we're going to go over the tacks.
The northern area? In the northern area?
In both.
I think you got to – I don't know how that could be possible, but okay. I just wanted to make one comment also about your report on the days at sea leasing increase. And before anybody panics or jumps off a bridge, you just have to remind people that we have to burn two of them every time we go out for everyone that you're actually on the ocean. So it would make sense that the leasing activity would increase, but it doesn't necessarily translate into increase in fishing mortality. Thank you.
Okay, Gene. Who's suing who?
Very little report, Mr. Chairman. We're still awaiting scheduling conferences in both lawsuits. The lawsuit brought by Massachusetts and New Hampshire challenging Framework 42, and lawsuit by some herring vessels challenging the permit splitting provision of the herring amendment. We are in the throes of supplementing the administrative record in the herring case, awaiting further communication from the plaintiff's attorney in that regard. But there's been no scheduling yet of any briefing at this point in time. That's all I have to report, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Gene? Okay, Science Center.
Thank you. I have quite a bit to report, but I'll try to keep it brief. The sea scallop survey was conducted this summer from July 11th to August the 15th. It was very successful. In addition to sampling close to 500 random stations, there were also two cooperative studies that were done along with the survey. In the Northern Shrimp Survey was completed in mid-August. It ran from July the 23rd to August the 16th. And this survey was also very successful. A lot more stations were sampled this year than last year. And the data will be available for stock assessment use in late September. The autumn bottom trawl survey began on September the 4th, and the first leg ended on September the 14th. The survey got lost a few days because of the tropical depression, which was off the coast. But there are four legs in this autumn bottom trawl survey, and that was just the first. Interesting that lionfish, which are indigenous to the Indian Ocean, were caught off Cape Hatteras. And this is the second year that we've taken lionfish. And in this case, there were four lionfish that were all taken in the same tow. And these were probably introduced by people who are in the aquarium trade. But I understand they're quite poisonous, and this is potentially a serious issue. The Bigelow has begun its shadow survey alongside the albatross, and it was difficult for them to get underway. In addition to the weather-related delays, there was issues with starting with a new vessel and crew and coordinating the two ships. So there were also some mechanical issues with the Bigelow. Anyway, so the first leg has been completed, and some shadow surveying was done, but not as much as we had hoped. And we hope that in the next three legs that we'll make up a lot of ground and do a lot more towing with the Bigelow. The herring acoustic survey is delayed this year, and it will commence around September the 25th. With 17 continuous days of survey effort. The NEMAP survey, which is the survey that will run along the coast, is being, funds have been committed by the Northeast Fisheries Science Center and the ASMFC to support the NEMAP survey. And the intent is for this to be used as a stock assessment survey index. As you know, the Bigelow can't get in as shallow as the albatross could. So this work with the NEMAP survey is viewed as something which will pick up a lot of the inshore area that won't be sampled by the Bigelow. We have a lot of meetings going on at the center related to stock assessment work. The SARC 45 took place in June on northern shrimp and sea scallops, and I'll be reporting on those results in just a little while. We also had in July a data poor working group assessment of monkfish, and I'll be reporting on those results this afternoon. We're making plans for the GARM, which you've already talked about a lot. There are four main meetings this year related to the GARM. And in addition to the four main meetings, there are sub-meetings or preliminary meetings for each of those. And the first big meeting that's coming up is the data methods meeting, which will be at the end of October, the week of October the 29th. Then there's a meeting on models the week of February the 25th, and a meeting on biological reference points the week of April the 28th. And the final GARM meeting will be where the 19 benchmark assessments will all be completed, is the week of August the 4th. For each of these preliminary meetings before the GARM, we try to include in our mail list enough people from the councils and the regional office so that they can send representatives to those meetings. So we're making an effort to reach out and include people along the way. The SARC 47 will occur this June with a summer flounder benchmark assessment. And then, of course, we have the TRAC meetings, which take place every spring. So that's just a sampling of some of the things that we're doing at the center. So everyone's very busy. And one final thing that I'll report has to do with RSAs. The Northeast Fisheries Science Center received 4 herring RSA and 10 monkfish RSA proposals as a result of a federal funding opportunity published in June 2007. All the proposals are currently under review, and awards are anticipated in mid to late December of 2007. And Earl Meredith is in the audience today if anybody has any questions about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Anyone for Jim? Dave.
Yeah, I think this would actually be a question for Pat. Given Jim's report on the lionfish, is there a possibility of sending out a permit holder letter with a picture of a lionfish and describing it and how to handle it and you know, what the poisonous parts are and whatnot? So basically, you know, we don't kill anybody. I mean, I think most fishermen are under the impression that in the North Atlantic there isn't anything that can harm you seriously. So, you know, crew are liable to, if they encounter one, just figure it's something they can pick up and throw over, and, you know, the results could be pretty disastrous. Given Jim's report, I think that would be a prudent thing to do if it's possible.
Yeah, certainly if the center can provide us with that information, we can send it out.
Is that possible, Jim, to write up a description of the and a picture so that people know what it is and also a description of how to handle it and basically what are the poisonous aspects of it and how to given that not everybody reads real well till after the fact, you know, for what measures might be necessary to treat somebody who's encountered one.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Okay, we're on to Mid-Atlantic liaisons. Philly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Give it to bifocals here. Before I give the Mid-Atlantic report, if I could, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to report to the council something that came to light to me just recently. I've seen it growing in the last few weeks, kind of like a Southern New England report. But just for the council's information, 20-30% of the mid to larger sized vessels in Southern New England in the last 6 to 8 months have been put up for sale. They are now on the market. And quite honestly, I think mine is going to be joining them. The Mid-Atlantic Council met in Port Washington, New York, August 6, 7, 8, and 9. Monday was a committee meeting for the Squid Mackerel Butterfish Committee, mostly dealing with the Butterfish Rebuilding Plan, Amendment 10. Gets a little fuzzy because parts of Amendment 9 got slid into 10 as far as the bycatch rebuilding. I mean, the bycatch issues and what have you, but that pretty much was hammered out all day. Amendment 9, by doing so, they allowed Amendment 9 to be submitted to the Secretary after a mere 6 or 7 years. Of interest in Amendment 10, the discussions were the FMAC recommendation to use a 3-inch mesh in the Lalago fishery or a 100% observer exemption program, which would be industry funded. And the reason I bring this up to this council is a 3-inch mesh in a Lalago fishery eliminates that fishery to the biggest extent. So you're going to have a whole fleet of boats, if this happens, that are going to be up here working on New England stocks, or stocks that's controlled by this council. So I think it's important to this council be aware of it. Probably 2/3 or better of those these Lalago boats also hold whiting permits. That's the other side of their fishery, so it's the balloon theory. If they leave one, they're going to the other, or the other, or the other. But they ain't going away. They're just going to move. So I think that's important for this council to know about. The council started the next day with a research set aside and an ecosystem committee meeting, followed by a presentation on the shark plan, after which the council met with the ASMFC board on scup, summer flounder, black sea bass. The results being a consensus by the two bodies, that's strange all by itself. Those results being the TALs for the year 2008 of summer flounder at 15.77 million pounds, which is a 1.34 million pound reduction. Scup at 7.34 million pounds, approximately a 40% reduction. Black sea bass, 4.22 million pounds, approximately 16% reduction. And bluefish at 28.16 million pounds, and approximately a 0.5 million pound increase. Amendment 15 was discussed, which is upcoming summer flounder amendment. As I've reported before, a couple of years ago, this one's going to bear watching. Some of the items that were taken out last year are now back in, and this one's going to bear watching. Tilefish amendment ITQ plan was addressed on the basis of the cost recovery options that are in the plan, and the no action, at the end of the day, the no action alternative became the preferred alternative. Also of interest, as I've mentioned before, there used to be a southern New England tilefish fishery that doesn't exist anymore. And at the rate this plan is going, it'll never will be. There are public hearings scheduled. I haven't been able to see where they are just yet, but they're scheduled for between October 15th and October 26th. You know, I urge anybody in the industry to try to participate. Also, the council voted, and I'm not sure you guys won't hear it here at some point during the day, to send a letter to the FDA and NEMS in the New England coastal states requesting that the talks be initiated to establish a process whereby NEMS could issue an FDA-approved permit to implement the current protocol to test for paralytic shellfish poisoning. That was pretty basic. And then also, if you recall, when I gave the mid-report in June, I reported some industry members at the previous meeting had received their histories from NIMS, and they had some large discrepancies in their histories. After I reported that, if you recall, the RA stated that service had been in touch with the individual that reported this, and most of the issues had been resolved, mostly through a miscoding error. And to Pat's credit, at the mid-meeting, Pat reported she had been misinformed on the issue somewhat, and that they are still working on trying to resolve some of these issues. Now, they're working with one guy, but at the June meeting, there were 6 or 7 industry members that reported this, one being a major player. I checked with that individual Monday, and NIMS has been down there, I visited them, and they haven't heard back from them, right? So it's still being looked at, I suppose. Myself, haven't heard this. I went to the groundfish meeting and reported this, but haven't heard that. I sent out and got my history. And in my history, I got some significant problems. I got 1 month. I landed 580,000 pound of herring. The service has me now for 172. That jumped out at me because there is no 162 in herring. They round to the thousand. So I can't even figure out where that number comes from. So on this point, I'd like to encourage all of the industry to go and check theirs. And I also like to point out to the council, as I reported in June, like I said, other members reported this incident. I got myself got mine back. And I'm flabbergasted that we haven't got around this a little further. Because when I looked into it a little deeper, this is the database. Let me go back to the page. This is the database that we're told we're supposed to use for developing any limited access program. Any fishery management plans, this is the database that we're told we need to use. So if we have issues here, we need to think about it. We're talking about going into sectors and LAPs and ITQs and all of this different stuff. This is the database that that's required from. This is also the database that's used in every stock assessment. That's dealt with at this table. These landings data go into every one of these models. And again, this is the database that controls all the quotas. Now, a few years back, it's 2-3 years ago. Say something like herring. I mean, there's issues here. Lolago closed early 1 year. At the end of the year, the following year it closed. You know, industry took a pretty good hit with that one. It was closed early. It had to reopen, but by the time it reopened, it was invaluable. I think that's happened 2 times, just in Lolago in recent years. I think it was last year on mackerel, numbers came out and industry got together and says, hey, numbers don't line up. Something's wrong here. And we're back and it had to be adjusted on the mackerel. Now you have the herring issue. So I bring up these points because I think it's quite an issue that needs to be looked at, or at least from the industry side of getting to the history of this thing, that there's a possible problem here. Now, in the handouts this morning was the reports, I think, and the Mid-Atlantic report. Plus, when this was brought up in June, Mid-Atlantic sent a letter to Pat about it, and you'll see Pat's response. And I included them letters because, to be quite honest, I find that letter extremely offensive as an industry person. The letter says it's a shared responsibility to keep track of this information. I mean, we're bound by a host of things to do here. We have absolutely no control over this, yet it's our responsibility, I find offensive. So I'll probably quit there. Any questions on this? You can probably ask Jimmy because he's on the clock.
Thanks, Phil. I'm going to ask you to come up front here. We have something to present you with.
If I could make a quick statement first, John.
All right.
First, I'd like to thank the staff of the council and the staff of NIMS for my time I served here. I was highly impressed with everybody I've had to work with, and I appreciate all the help that was given to me by everybody on the staff. I especially like to thank Karen, Joan, and Juanita and their group. Of course, they make anybody look good. I mean, look to your left. And to all the members that are here, it's been memorable working here at the table with everybody. But as far as picking up the gift, John, I'm going to decline it. I appreciate the effort. It's nothing personal. but I can't accept it. To accept it would say that I think I did a good job for 3 years sitting here, or that this council did a good job. I made my last groundfish trip in June. I had a throw over cod, haddock, yellowtail, monk, skate, George's flounders, and summer flounder to try and get a trip. You know, some members might say, well, why don't you just move? Check my track. We move 2-3 times a day. That's what we're doing as managers at this point. When I look back at what we've done over the last 3 years, I can't remember leaving a meeting feeling good. I look back at the plans we've passed and the actions we've taken, and I can't take any pride in it. A long time ago, John, and the rest of you folks, I learned the difference between right and wrong. This system went wrong.
Jim Roll, do you have anything to add to Mid-Atlantic happenings?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Philly kind of appeared all of the actions that we have taken. I do want to make people aware about this data issue. This is a very, very big deal. This is not something that needs to be ignored. It's to the point now, because of the complexity of it and the time that it takes for each fisherman to go back and review his records and compare them against the database, that at our next meeting, we're going to suggest that we utilize some outside sources, get an independent entity involved in this, and some outside funding, because these are very, very significant differences. My first call after discovering this was to John Witzig. And I wanted to let him know that this problem was out there, and I put him in touch yesterday face-to-face with one of the processors or one of the dealers that has a very unique situation. He only has two boats. There is no outside entity. He is a dealer for two of the biggest freezer trawlers in New England. And he has got discrepancies. He's got trips missing. And these trips are 1.5 million pounds apiece. He's got three trips for the same boat in three different days, consecutive days. The problem is that if, in fact, when you look at this in the big picture and back up, what happened with herring may, in fact, have happened with Lolligo. He's got one boat that's got 1 million pounds more out Lolligo credited to it than it should have. That means they came off the quota. That means the quota shut down too early. There's big ramifications from this, and because it's so complex, I think it's going to be the responsibility of our council to initiate this action, to do this outside review, and get all the fishermen that have got issues to have a source to go to rectify those. Probably a lot of them could be rectified as simply data errors. This guy's situation is so extreme, it can't be just typos. He's credited with monkfish, lobsters, red snappers. He doesn't have permits for any of these fish. He has never caught these fish. He's got very significant landings. The biggest concern, sir, is the fact that they came from somebody else. The entries to his vessels had to come from somebody else. So somebody else is losing while he's gaining. Thank God this guy's got integrity and is pointing this out. If it was me, I'd have to say there's 1 million pounds. We have one boat's got 4 million pounds more mackerel than it caught. We haven't finished the limited entry program to mackerel. What would you do? What would you do? Would you report a 4 million pound error in your favor? You know, it's a big deal. So just to make everybody aware, Mid-Atlantic's going to go further with this than just brushing it off. We're going to try to include outside entities because it's going to tie back to not only quotas, not only stock assessment, but any LAPP program that's going to be developed, any program. If there's problems with the database and history is going to be questioned because of some errors, regardless of who made them, we need to get that behind us. So that's something that we're going to be looking at a little further. But everybody in the positions in John's office are well aware of the situation. They've taken some actions, but nothing has been resolved, absolutely nothing. But they are at least talking, so we're going down the right road. But just to make you very clear, this is a very big deal to Mid-Atlantic. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Pete Jensen, if there's anything you'd like to add. Nope, we're all set. Okay. Pat?
Thanks. I just want to speak to the state issue a little bit because we do take it very seriously, and And as Jim pointed out, folks in the statistics program are very aware of it and are working through the issues. Some of the problems that have been identified, I mean, Jim's right, that example that he gave, most likely it was somebody else's vessel. And one of the things that we found is that some of the dealers the dealers are required to identify the vessel. And they're looking down a list of vessels. A lot of vessels have the same name, and so the dealer isn't taking the time to determine what the appropriate vessel number is, and they're just picking by name. And so in some cases, the information is being assigned to the wrong vessel. That's just one of the problems that we're looking at. And so, you know, I'm sorry that Phil was offended by the letter, but that was the point we were trying to make in saying this is a shared responsibility. The dealers are entering a lot of this information. And so they have as much of a responsibility as we do in trying to make sure that that information is accurate. And the same with the vessel trip reports. The vessel trip reports are provided by the vessel operators. And so they have a responsibility to make sure the information is accurate as well. And it's only between the three of us are we going to get the best data available. Now, the other thing I want to point out is that this database was never intended for this use. Yes, we're telling people that this is the information to use for limited access programs or LAPs or dedicated, whatever we're calling them this year. But it's because it's the only data available, and we've repeatedly said to the councils and repeatedly cautioned the councils in using information that's too old, that the further back you go, the less reliable the information is. And this just helps to illustrate that. But this was never intended to be used for this. This is intended to be used for quota monitoring and for stock assessment purposes. And so, for example, in a situation where it was assigned to the wrong vessel, that's not going to impact quota monitoring or the stock assessment information. And so we feel it's a lot more reliable for the use it was intended. And I would point out that when we do implement limited access systems, that everyone has the opportunity to correct their individual data at that point, and that's the system that we've used right from the beginning. So we're working on it. We know there are problems, and we're certainly interested in hearing from anyone that thinks they have information that would indicate we need to make some corrections, and have absolutely no problem with people asking for their individual information and trying to verify that. And I know one of the things that John has suggested and the statistics program is looking at is sending out quarterly reports to people so that on a quarterly basis they're able to look at that information and verify it in the future. Thanks.
Dave.
Yeah, just to follow up on this a little bit, I'm not sure everybody's aware, but there's apparently a report being prepared by somebody, I believe it's within the Science Center, an update on social and economic data by community. The only reason I know about it is our local board of selectmen actually contacted my wife and myself, because they didn't know any fishermen in town, to see if they could verify that the information was correct. And actually the information appears to be very much in error. They had us Hampton, New Hampshire, down for landing tilefish, scup, summer flounder, about 1.5 million pounds of those three species. I think the New Hampshire quota for summer flounder is 79 pounds. We don't have a scup quota. I do have a scup permit. We've never seen a tilefish. Anyway, what we did is we sent back information to the people involved and said, you know, check the Hampton. In our case, the Hampton's a plus, you know, there's three Hamptons that I could think of. There's Hampton, Virginia, Hampton, Long Island, and Hampton, New Hampshire. There may be more. And what we think happened is that landings from one of those other southern ports have been accredited to our town. So this, you know, this is an issue that everybody should be aware of and should be checking into. The other thing in our case was there were no groundfish landings, and all we catch is groundfish and shrimp, northern shrimp. We can laugh about it, but, you know, if these kinds of errors are occurring in my town, they're probably occurring in your town, too. And if you haven't seen that report, perhaps you should contact the I guess they sent it to the local governing authority, selectman, mayor, whatever it is, for verification. But somebody should be checking on these reports and making sure that they are, in fact, accurate. You know, look at Gloucester. There's a Gloucester, Virginia, and Gloucester, Massachusetts. You know, maybe half of Gloucester, Massachusetts' land ends up being attributed to Virginia or something. You know, but anyway, just again to kind of reinforce what Jimmy said to say, people should be aware of these problems and should verify the data. You know, it's in all our best interest to make sure it's correct.
Okay, in the interest of time, I'm going to move on to Commander. You want to give the Coast Guard report?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Sitting in here today for Captain McGinnis, who sends his regards. He's in D.C. working on a special project this week, but he'll be back for the next council meeting. Following report is for the 1st of June to the 31st of August. It was a relatively quiet period. Our Marine Safety Department reports that there were 38 casualty cases during this period. 8 lives were saved, and there were no deaths during this period. Those 38 cases break down as 16 personal injury cases. Most of those were illness, not necessarily fishing injuries, but sickness, heart issues, that kind of thing. 13 equipment casualties and 9 vessel groundings. Also, of those 38 cases, there were 3 fires, 6 taking on water, and also 6 vessel sinkings. There were 284 commercial fishing vessel safety examinations were conducted. Of those, 217 received a decal. Also of note, we had during this period we had 22 EPIRB activations, all of which were non-distress cases, kind of just indicating the idea that we get these. The EPIRB is a very good tool, but we still get false alarms, and all those cases we were able to track down, notify the owner, that kind of thing. During this period, we boarded 353 fishing vessels. 66 of those vessels boarded were issued a total of 122 minor safety violations. Those safety violations were predominantly in 4 categories: expired visual distress signals, expired hydrostatic releases on survival craft, expired hydrostatic releases on EPIRBs, and also survival suit program problems such as non-serviceable or missing. Also, 7 commercial vessels were terminated due to improper number or condition of survival suits, expired life rafts, no EPIRBs, lack of correct fire extinguishers, and actually we had 1 boating while intoxicated case also. 14 fishing violations were issued since the last council meeting. 4 were for op permit concerns. 4 were for twine top or net mesh. Another 3 were for protected species gear configuration issues, such as the TED chainmat in the scallop fishery, or improper gear configuration for the whale take reduction plan requirements. 2 closed area incursions, and also 1 for undersized buried lobsters. And I'll close by saying also, since we last met, we had a change of command at our fishery training center down there at Cape Cod. Lieutenant Ryan Hamill, he's now the operations officer on the cutter Escanaba out of Boston, so you might hear him on the radio when you guys are out there on the water. And he was replaced by Lieutenant Rula Deischer. If you can stand up, she's here in the audience. She'll be here all day if anybody wants to say hi to her. She just reported she was operations officer on the Tahoma, which is out of Portsmouth, so she's rather familiar with the New England area as well. And that's all I have.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. 1 month ago, the U.S. Coast Guard celebrated its 1,100,000th rescue. Now, I happen to know that number because through a combination of human error and plain bad luck, I was 1,100,001. And I would like to read into the record here a letter that I wrote to Admiral Sullivan. Rear Admiral Timothy S. Sullivan, Commander, 1st U.S. Coast Guard District, Boston, Massachusetts. Dear Admiral Sullivan, during the night of 2021, August 2007, I was fishing on a vessel approximately 130 nautical miles south-southeast of Air Station Cape Cod, where I experienced a life-threatening medical emergency. After accidental ingestion of peanuts, to which I am strongly allergic, I lapsed into anaphylactic shock despite the application of an EpiPen and Benadryl. I am still not sure how I survived the night, but an integral part of it was the outstanding and heroic performance of personnel under your command. Upon receipt of the distress call, the U.S. Coast Guard launched a Falcon jet and a helicopter, into which I was airlifted sometime around midnight and flown to Cape Cod Hospital. Every aspect of the operation was carried out to perfection. The pickup was witnessed by crews of nearly a dozen fishing vessels in the immediate area, most of whom have contacted me to express their awe at the flying and rescue skills demonstrated by your crew under deteriorating weather conditions. Once aboard, I found the corpsman who tended to me to be both professionally competent and scrupulously courteous. Unfortunately, I was not sufficiently coherent to thank your crew, and I would appreciate it if you would forward my sincerest thanks to them. As long as we have young people of their quality, the future of our country is secure. There were a number of lessons learned in the tuna fleet that night, including a greatly heightened respect for the U.S. Coast Guard and the job that it does. With highest regards, David E. Preble. I don't know how you thank people for that, but I do know that if it weren't for these people, that this chair I'm sitting in right now would be empty today. So thank you.
I'll make sure your words are passed down to the air station for sure.
Thanks, Dave. NIMS Enforcement.
Good morning, everybody. For those that don't know me, my name is Mark Michelli. I'm the deputy agent in charge in Gloucester. Andy Cohen's not here. He's travel status in D.C., so I'll try to fill in for him as best as I can. The report I'm passing around, I believe this is the same report that they may have issued at the Mid-Atlantic Council. I just have a few additions to the report that I could convey to you verbally. One thing I would want to say about that, about the Coast Guard, is that I echo the same sentiments. You know, I've been off for 29 years, and I think the relationship that we have with the Coast Guard is one that's very strong, and I've witnessed myself some of the firsthand capabilities by the Coast Guard, by people of very young ages that do a lot, and I think that's something that everybody should see and appreciate. As far as some major actions that have gone on, oh, one other thing. I do want to apologize to Paul and to the council and to Pat that we did have to change the agenda, and that was our fault. John Pinkerton, the national VMS manager, was scheduled to be here yesterday, and there were some changes in his plans. He was tied up on something. I don't know exactly what the issues were, to be honest with you. But Bill Semro was going to fill in for him and present the report. Bill and I spoke over the weekend, and that report will be forthcoming. I will make sure that you guys get it. We're dealing with headquarters and Bill right now to try to produce that VMS report as soon as we can get it to you. But I apologize for the mix-up, and I apologize for those that may have shown up at this meeting yesterday morning to sit here and listen to the National VMS manager, because it is an enforcement program, and that was something that should not happen. Significant developments. We had a NOVA that was just issued. I believe it went out last week regarding herring. It was issued to the Western Sea, $500,000 NOVA and a two-year permit sanction for allegedly failing to report on 48 counts. I don't have any particulars, any specifics on that, but all that is still pending. It's with NOAA General Counsel. $1.1 million NOVA was issued to Greg Duckworth, owner and operator of the Reaper and Twister, for multiple violations of the Magazine-Stevens Act, and that's been going on for some time. agents in Maryland assisted the Delaware officers and the Maryland officers on an arrest this past quarter on a boarding on a recreational boat that kind of got carried away, and there was a alleged assault and intimidation, so there was an arrest on that. Canadian DFO officers were assisted by our agents on some suspected fishing in undisputed Canadian waters, and some lobster traps were seized. The agents up in Rye, New Hampshire, worked on an alleged whale strike by a recreational vessel, and that's still all pending. I believe an $8,000 NOVA was issued in that case. There were a couple of elephant trunk cases, I believe. We worked with the Coast Guard this past quarter. And I believe that's it, based on my notes. I apologize. I was just trying to read from some of the notes that I was provided. There are some other herring cases that are pending. I believe there's 8 or 9 of them right now that are still being worked, and our agents are working that in conjunction with the people in the regional office. Does anybody have any questions?
Thank you. Dave?
Yeah, I didn't quite hear what you said regarding the Western Wave. What was the nature of their infraction, and what was the penalty?
No, it was the Western Sea.
The Western Sea, I'm sorry.
Yeah. 48 counts for failure to report, allegedly failing to report.
Allegedly failing to report how much?
Allegedly failing to report approximately 15 million pounds of herring during the third quarter of 2007.
Okay, 15 million pounds during the third quarter of 2007.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other question? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
ASMFC, I don't know who's giving that report. I guess we're not going to have that one. Did you have anything, Jim? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for everybody's information, Jim mentioned earlier that the NEMAP inshore survey is going to take place next upcoming. Actually, we're doing the survey. My boat is doing the survey. We're supposed to sail Monday of next week. The incorporation of grounds further to the north has put us up to the borderline of Massachusetts, so we're going to be in Block Island Sound, and we're going to be in Rhode Island Sound and Long Island Sound, and, well, right up to Cutty Hunk. I would like to I've already talked to a lot of the guys in Rhode Island. I have the discrepancy of making a tow in the chosen strata. My theory is a little bit different than the offshore survey. I'll give the fixed gear people notification that I'm going to be there at a certain time. I need a 100-foot wide path to make a 20-minute tow. My strategy is you move it or I'll move it for you. That's the way this is going to go. I'm not giving up strata for fixed gear. So I'll put the word out, make everybody well aware of it. I'm doing what I'm asked to do. I made 98 out of 100 required tows last year. I'm expected to do 150 this year. I'm going to do the best I can. I'll provide state directors the information, the strata, the location, and the approximate dates. I need a hole to get through. If it's not there, I'm going to make it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any questions for Jim? Dave?
You mentioned Jim sampling in Long Island Sound. I didn't realize the NEMAP survey was considering that. Do you have any idea how many tows?
I believe it's about 7, but they're more on the Connecticut, they're closer to the Connecticut shoreline than they are to Long Island side in the Sound. They're more on the northern side than they are the southern side. I believe it's 7, 7 or 6, something along those lines.
Did NEMAP get a collector's permit for that?
NEMAP has every permit that it needs to do all of the collection. Something you might want to note about the permits that are required. There's a definite coalition between the latitude of the East Coast and the amount of paperwork it takes to get a permit. The further north you go, the more baloney you got to put up with.
That's why I'm surprised I didn't hear about it.
Anything else on that subject?
We will take a 5-minute break to get set up for the next presentation, and let's see if we can keep it to close to 5 minutes.
Council is going to receive the findings of the SAW report for sea scallop, northern shrimp.